Hello, dear listener. I want to take a quick moment here to tell you all about Lonely Spectre Productions' latest album, Eerie Earfuls, Haunted Sounds of Halloween Night. Comprised of chilling sound effects for the spooky season, it is an ooky spooky new narrative and all original music by Jared Good, James Edwards, and special musical guest Sean Keller. As you know from the killer sounds of Halloween, we had him on Fright School last Halloween. Eerie Earfuls follows three adventurous children on a journey through the macabre neighborhood of Evercrest, Massachusetts. As our heroes make their way to a mysterious Halloween bash, they must brave ravenous werewolves, ghastly ghosts, eccentric witches, and a nightmarish array of other ghouls before the night is over. You can find it on Bandcamp and probably wherever you can buy new spooky music albums. We adore the crew over there, and we just wanted to give them a shout out, so please check it out, and you can check out the notes on this episode section for more information. Happy Halloween!
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua. How are you doing?
I am doing all right. So excited because it's still October and it's spooky season.
I know. It's very spooky season.
We are deep in it.
Yeah, we're recording again in person.
I know. Look at this. You're right there. I can see your face.
I know. I wanted to do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it was so funny because you were like, let's do old-fashioned. Let's watch a movie together and record. Like, look at that.
In the same day at the same time.
In the same day at the same time. Just like the olden days. The olden times.
Yes, the old ways.
Yes,
as
the
old
ways.
As we know.
As we will get into in the second half. But for now, what's going on? What's happening? How are you doing?
Oh, you know what? I'm doing great. I started a new job. I don't really talk about work on here, so yeah. I won't say too much more, but I did start, I work for the CIA or something.
Yeah.
I started.
Because you definitely don't work for the CIA.
Yeah, I definitely don't.
Wink, wink, nudge.
Yeah. I'm not an international man of mystery with a license to kill.
No, not at all.
No.
Definitely not.
I have a license to slay a look, though. No.
There you go.
But Joshua's laughing, because when have I ever, quote unquote, slayed a look.
You know, I mean, you got your normie thing pinned down really well.
Thank you. I love my normie look.
Yeah.
And you've got, like, you know, I look like your assistant. I think when we go places, I look like, you know, I look like you are Coco and I am Mallory. Identity spell style. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just totally. Yeah.
Referenced a season of American Horror Story that probably nobody watched or remembers.
Are you kidding? What? That was like one of my favorites. You know, I love a revisiting.
Yes.
You know, I mean, also this season gave us, like, you know, a coven of, like, gay warlocks. I mean, that's, I'm true, assuming gay. Because,
right. They didn't go too far in. They were just very catty.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, behold Chablis.
Yeah.
And what is it? Something Pennypacker? Baldwin Pennypacker.
Hot. Yeah.
Part of me thinks that just, you know, that's all kinds of gay. Anyway, so yeah, I got a new job, which has been great.
Awesome.
And I've actually been watching something new. James and I have decided to jump on Jimmy Kim's and decided to jump on the bandwagon, and we watched the first two episodes of Squid Game.
Oh, very cool. We've not started it. I've added it to my list, but I haven't started it, so don't get too spoilerly now.
No, not gonna get too spoilerly. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure you
can. Is it full of squids?
And games, yes.
Awesome. I love squids.
Do you really?
I think they're really cool creatures.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant like to eat. Like,
well, that too, I guess. Calamari. That's squid, right?
I don't know. I don't eat calamari, so.
Well, but all that, you don't really do seafood.
Huh? No, I do like fish straight up. Oh, you know, right. I don't really do, you know, all of the other of, you know, the creatures of the sea. I just eat fish straight up.
Yeah. Well, I will eat them, but I do also think they're pretty cool animals, like to see swimming around and stuff. You know, not that I like go swimming with squids, but I just mean on like a nature video.
Yeah. I was like, do you like commune with cuttlefish or something? Like,
yeah, you didn't know that. It's my special power. Oh yeah. They love me.
That explains a lot. So we watched it. And it was, first two episodes are pretty great. It's not going to be for everybody, but I'm actually really surprised at how popular it's getting. So. Popular it's getting among an American audience, I should say, specifically because, you know, if it's not made in Hollywood and it doesn't speak in English, then we don't really, you know, it seems like Americans don't really care. And so I know, like, I have started to be like you, where if it's a foreign language film, you prefer to read the subtitles. Mm-hmm. With Squid Game, they did a really good job of dubbing the English, and that's how we've been watching it, and actually it doesn't make me miss the subtitles at all. I can actually focus a little bit on what's going on, so
yeah,
just throwing that out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that would be, yeah, I wouldn't do that. I would probably just read it,
listen to it in its Korean.
But that's the thing, though, you know, I mean, there's this like illusion that, you know, that Americans like don't want to engage with like foreign content, but like I think that something like this kind of proves like people don't, you know, I mean, like anime is insane here. Japanese horror films are insane here. You know, they remake them, but I feel like people still have an appreciation for like the original. I know they're saying that Squid Games is going to get an American remake, but I mean, that's a rumor I saw. I saw a few things. I saw that. I saw a thing saying that the person who wrote it spent like 10 years trying to sell it and then finally did. And now it's like number one in 90 countries. The other thing I saw was somebody was saying that it's not being interpreted exactly, like the translation. I don't know if that's with the subtitles or with the dub. But I saw some criticism about that as well. But again, I've not seen it, so I don't know. And I guess maybe I wouldn't even know since I don't speak the language. Yeah. But I saw there were some discrepancies like posted about some of the translations were a little
sexist,
maybe.
That totally makes sense a little bit. Mainly because I feel like the same thing happened with Parasite. Like there were people who did you watch Parasite?
No, not yet.
So there's something that happens in Parasite where like this particular food item doesn't have a like English translation.
Yeah.
So they had to create one, which ended up being a whole like American meme from it. But
okay.
I mean, that's the thing. Like we're living in an America that like the number one pop group is BTS,
right?
Which is a Korean based pop group. So, you know, that's the thing is that I think that like this is the future that the conservatives are scared of, right? It's the globalization. Yeah. And I think we've talked about before the idea of soft power, where it's like cultural artifacts that help influence like policy and life in another country. So, Plus, I mean, not for nothing, Korea has its own, has a lot of its own problems with regards to class. Like it's huge class disparities as well.
Yeah.
So it only makes sense that, you know, it only makes sense that it is kind of getting a reading and a translation and resonating with folks here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, maybe it's just me wanting to, like, as much of a misanthropic person as I can be when I it's like, I also do think that we are, like, way cooler than we're, like, led to believe sometimes. Like, in the sense of, like, I think people are way more, I don't know. It goes back and forth, but there are some times where I'm like, you know, I think maybe we're going to be okay. Like if we stop believing that we're all pieces of garbage, like maybe we're really not as, you know, I don't know. So like the it goes back to like the conversation we had about Get Out being so popular and now this, and you know, there's been other things that are not necessarily American made and in like American English like that, mm-hmm. you know, have been successful and that we've demanded has to be like remade. Like I really think that's coming from like Hollywood studio suit motherfuckers who just, you know, they're the ones who need to have things remade in their image rather than
yeah.
the populace.
Yeah,
as
it's
a whole.
Doing fine just exactly as it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus, I mean, it also opens up an entire, like, it opens up, like, droves of new content for people because the people who like this are going to go and try to discover, like, K-dramas. If they didn't already
yeah.
watch them, they're going to discover K-dramas. They're going to discover, like, you know, they're going to discover films, specifically horror films from Korea, where it's like, I think that was always my misguided and quite frankly fairly xenophobic and racist idea in terms of like watching foreign films used to be that the quality was not going to be as good, and in terms of, you know, the movie quality. But at the end of the day, that as long as you have the money, the technology is there. So if there's a film industry, the quality will be there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's so interesting because I feel like, and maybe again, this might be my own sort of like, I don't know how to put it exactly. Like I've found that a lot of foreign content that I've engaged with over my life has been far superior to American stuff sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, like deeper or more like cerebral. Again, that might be my own like biases about like, you know, American quote culture. For some things, not everything, like, you know, like some of the horror films that get remade, I'm like, well, this took away all the nuance that existed in, you know, like the original, like, you know, Let the Right One In or something like that.
I was just going to say,
you know,
that,
like
yeah.
where it's like, it kind of loses something in translation that was there that either Americans don't understand or again, more likely studio executives think people won't understand. And so they simplify to be like, you know, well, Americans, like they're the ones telling us we're dumb, not the other way around. Sometimes again, there are lots of ways that people are dumb, you know?
But yeah, it's it's the studio executives thinking that because it's not going to sell, this is capitalism and film
yeah.
art, right? Because it's not going to sell, we need to make it in this way.
Right, or make it so it's so, like, base, where, yeah I feel like, no, a lot of the content I've engaged with, and again, I don't really engage with film on, like, the level of, like, you know, is this well-crafted, the cinematography, mm-hmm. like, the cameras they're using, that, you know, I'm wanting a good story that speaks to, like, you know, a cultural thing or yeah. just is experiential or takes me on kind of a journey. And so I've just found that a lot of like foreign horror, again, maybe because it is speaking to things that sometimes don't exist from an American perspective, you know, because yeah. they're talking about their own particular cultural anxieties and other places, other artists, other filmmakers that are creating things, you know, or it's just, yeah, that it feels a little smarter. But again, but that also sounds bad. It's like, it's not exact. I'm not able to exactly craft. I think what I meant is just like nuance, like some things
yeah.
I've just never considered it that way. Like I've never heard like what you're saying where like, oh, foreign films may be less, might not be as good because of like access to, like, I've never heard that concern. Most what I hear from people who don't want to watch a foreign film is they don't want to read it or they are like, or people feel like they won't identify with the story, where it's like, well, a lot of these things can also be universal or can be creepy because you learn about, you know, new things to scare you if we're staying just in horror.
Yeah.
But again, lots of like incredible films have, you know, come over and, you know, won yeah. Oscars and, you know, if, you know, we're measuring things by that, you know, Academy Award kind of, you know, awards season in general, done well.
So the example that I always give is the movies. I think I've actually talked about this on the show before, but Shall We Dance with Richard Gere, Jennifer Lopez,
and
Susan Sarandon. So I didn't know this, but Shall We Dance, American version, is actually a remake of a Japanese film.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I've talked about this when we did Ringu, probably, but the Japanese film talks more about like the culture of what it means to be like a man who wants more,
right?
Who wants more than just like what he has,
yeah.
his that kind of existential. This isn't a horror film by any means, but like that existential angst of like, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. Subsequently, like, I thought that it was clearer that he was not there to cheat, and he was there to be like, he was there to be more fulfilled as a person in order to like be better partner for his wife.
Right.
And I didn't really get that. I think that's what Shall We Dance American version missed out. Like it was supposed to be just a fun dance movie, but like, you know, it was saying more in Japanese than it was in America.
Yeah. And in that case, that maybe would have still read because, you know, men in American society, because we're like, have you heard of like power distance?
No, what is that?
So it's like this idea in like cultural psychology, there are these different distals like of power, and one of them is like masculine, feminine. So like masculine countries like Japan, it's like a 90 on the scale of masculine ideals. And what that means is like, sort of in America, we're also pretty high on it, I believe, in the sense of like competition, hierarchical structures in business and things like that. So I feel like that idea might really resonate with, you know, some American men of wanting, of like being kind of trapped. So I think that's a good example of like how things don't need to get lost or don't need to be taken away and could have had a more profound conversation.
Exactly, because in the American version, he like is inspired to dance, but it assumes that the reason why he wants to dance is because he wants to be closer to this beautiful woman, Jennifer right. Lopez,
and not his wife,
or not just even for himself,
right? Or yeah. Huh. Well, anyways, the point is that you're enjoying Squid Games, right?
Yeah. we're watching it together.
Yeah.
So, you know, because we don't live together, we're going to be doing what we did most of last year, which is like, you know, on days when we can't be together, we'll probably watch it like remotely. So, you know, we'll press play at the same time. Shout out to anyone else who did that with friends and family over the pandemic, but yeah, and that ended up being some of my favorite ways to watch things because, like, we get to experience something together at the same time, too.
Yeah. Well, how fun. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it myself.
Yeah.
And to hearing your thoughts on it when we get there.
Yes. Yeah. I actually would think that if we could time it, like, it would be cool to watch it with you.
Yeah.
Like, towards the end.
Yeah.
So
we'll see. I don't know how soon we're going to be able to like start it just because we have a million other things happening. But
well, yeah, it's spooky season. So speaking of which, what have you been watching?
Well, you know, you brought up American Horror Story, and I realized I don't think we've even really talked about the latest season yet on the show.
Well, we may.
Maybe we mentioned it. But
maybe we'll maybe do it for a special episode because it's coming up. The end is coming
up. I don't know. You know, I've been enjoying it, though, I guess. So
our listeners love when we produce the show live on air.
Yeah. Because again, this is totally live. All right. Well, then maybe we'll do something when that wraps up and then we'll talk about it. All right. So we'll stick a pin in that. Sorry, dear listeners, if you've been on your edge of your seat waiting to hear what we thought of American Horror Story.
Yeah. Our not review.
They're
review.
Like, wait, what? What is that? Is that it? That's still on. We did watch the Addams Family sequel, Addams Family 2.
Okay.
To the cartoon version that came out, I think, in 2019, right?
Yeah.
It was like right before the pandemic. Everything is like that now. Before pandemic, after pandemic. Well, we're still in the pandemic. We're not even after COVID yet. That'll be the new, like, BC, before COVID.
Yeah.
What is it? Before the Common Era. Well, BCE, I guess they say.
BCE, and then CE is the Common Era.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, AD, Anno Domini.
Yeah, so we'll have to, it's going to shift. It'll be before COVID and after the COVID era. Before COVID era, after the COVID. Well, there will be no after, I guess. We're just here with
it. It's before COVID, and then it'll be, you know,
we've spent hellscape. Too much time trying to figure this out. Yeah, exactly. Hellscape. Apocalypse. So we watched the new Addams Family 2. It was cute. It wasn't exactly what I thought it would be. Not like the first one, I kind of, it was cute, but it was also like, yes, this is a, like, I get this story, like what they're kind of doing with it. It was cute. It was fun. I liked the animation. You know, those usual themes that you find in Adam's Family about, like, you know, the abnormal are actually, you know, far more, like, well-adjusted than the normies, so to speak. But this new one, it was like they were, like, on a road trip, you know, to, like, it was like vacation with the Adam's Family, while at the same time having this, like, question of, like, Wednesday's paternity. So that maybe somebody else was her dad, maybe she was switched at birth, which is really a fascinating thing when you're, like, look at this child. This is obviously an Adams.
Is it nature or nurture?
Right.
It's not Marilyn from the Munsters.
Right. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the question, right? But it was cute. I mean, I definitely recommend checking it out. We bought, like, the cinema at home thing, you know, whatever it is, movies at home version, and watched it together. It was fun. But I say you could definitely wait until it's like HBO Max or whoever's going to have it. Yeah. I think Prime has
probably. Paramount Plus or
right Paramount know. Plus
how many most can we name
it's a bingo card, like, how many do you have? Yeah, so that was fun. That was kind of like the big thing. Otherwise, I've been doing my, like, I save to watch certain things during this time, mm-hmm. during this month. So I watched Hocus Pocus the other night, which was fun.
I did too.
Yeah.
My friends did an outdoor viewing.
Oh, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get
They're
an
not
invite.
Horror people. I was really trying to get them to watch, like, you know, Teeth or High Tension. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, let's watch something gay and something slashery. And they were like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, Hocus Pocus is, I guess, fine. Adequate.
Yeah. It's fun. Anyway. That would be a nice outdoor movie, yes, to kind of watch, because you don't have to, like, we've all seen it a million times. You can, like, talk over it, have drinks, have
exactly.
popcorn.
You'd be like, you know, you there.
Yeah, exactly. And you sing and you do, you know, you quote at it, you talk back at it. That would be fun. That would be a good one to do that with. So, yeah, I watched that. I also watched, Lord, I watched the original Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh,
Showtime movie from 1996, I think, or 4, 94, 96, somewhere around there, with Melissa Joan Hart, of course.
But then with the aunts
totally,
are different.
Yeah, everybody's different. It's like a totally different cast. All those people are like, what? We didn't get hired for the ABC show?
Wait, so was the show before or after?
After. They made the film and then...
They did the...
And then adapted it for television. Okay. Yeah. Which is so funny because I was listening to the Elvira. You know, I've been listening to Elvira's autobiography. I haven't finished it yet because it's like I can't bear to. I'm like, oh, it's going to be over. I've only got a couple more chapters left. And it's been fun listening to her tell it. But she talked about, you know, she did a pilot called The Elvira Show, which was about her and, like, I guess it's a sister or something like that. But anyways, it's like two witches, their pet cat, and then a niece comes to live with them who has magical powers, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, they're gonna, like, take her under their wing, and, you know, that's kind of like the concept. And the same thing, that they're, like, witches living in this, like, normie kind of town. So, but one of the execs, like, one of the big wigs or whatever, saw the pilot and was like, you know, you can't put tits like that on TV, you know? So, like, it didn't happen. Like, even though she was pretty sure, like, she tells the whole story in the book that she was pretty much guaranteed. Like, they basically promised that this was going to go, and then, but that's, you know, fucking Hollywood. So she was just kind of like, I feel like a little bitter, because she's like, a couple years later, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like, debuted and was a big hit, and it was about two aunts, their pet cat, and a teenage witch, but no boobies. So... Yeah. That was the thing.
There was a conspicuous absence of Yabos.
Yes, there you go. Yabos. Oh my gosh. To bring it back to Hocus Pocus. Yes. So, yeah. So I watched that, the Sabrina, just for fun. I saw it and I was like, yeah, it was out. I'd watched The Wicker Man and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch that.
Here's my palate cleanser.
Yeah, it popped up. Well, I mean, I love The Wicker Man. We'll get into that. So it's like, I didn't necessarily need a palate cleanser, but I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this. This will be fun. Just kind of lay here on the couch and, like, you know, be a vegetable and watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It's, the movie is, like, ridiculous, but I enjoy it. I also am looking forward to, I think, was it Chelsea? I think Chelsea posted that they had watched Witches of Eastwick and Practical Magic.
Yes.
Or Bed Bath and Broomsticks.
Yeah.
I think they call it. I was like, I think that's a really fun double feature, so I'm going to do that sometime this week.
Bed Bath and Broomsticks.
Yeah, because as of this, once this recording comes out, Alice Hoffman, who wrote the novel that Practical Magic is based on, she's released two prequels, and now a sequel will come out tomorrow, Tuesday the 12th.
Do you have your copy already?
Not yet, but I have it through Warwick. She's doing a live signing on Zoom, so yes, I have my ticket to that, and then they'll ship me the book, which is good because I have a lot of books I'm trying to finish, but I'm excited to finally read it. It's been like 20 plus years or something since the first one was published, to get the sequel. Like I said, we've gotten a couple prequels, and that's been really great to like learn about like the family and all of that in the past, but I'm kind of excited to find out what Sally and Jillian and Tony and Kylie have been up to in all this time.
Joshua, you are like the word basic I would never use to describe you until this moment.
That's delightful. That's fine by me. If being,
I'm going to go put the lime in the coconut, okay?
Like, yeah. Hey, I love, oh my gosh, I want that house so bad. I love Practical Magic. It's adorable. It's like you get to see Sandra Bullock and, Nicole Kidman with their old faces. That's super fun. You get to see Stockard Channing and Diane Wiest. Is it Diane Wiest that's
Diane
in
Diane Wiest, yeah. Yes.
So it's like, I love
Aidan
it.
Aidan Quinn.
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, whatever his name is.
Oh, yeah.
Goran Slobodan Milosevic. Yeah, I don't know, whatever. Yeah, yeah. That was bad. I should have said that.
You're awful. The music, I like the music in it. There's some Stevie Nicks in there. It's a good time, you know? So, yeah. So, we've got things coming up. Halloween Kills is coming up. Mm-hmm. As of this recording, last night I went to the Scream 25th anniversary screening, but we'll have to talk about that on next week's episode. as we play with time here, as we do.
These are voices from the past.
I'm very excited for Halloween Kills. That comes out the 15th, so this Friday. What else is going on? We're having an all day. That's going to be super fun. Maybe I'll have to figure out a way to like live tweet or do something. I don't know, something.
Well, I mean, like,
for Halloween.
Maybe for like one or two films, but don't do it the whole time. Like,
yeah.
Don't, I mean, I'm telling Joshua not to work the whole day to promote our podcast when he knows full well that I don't do the Twitter. So
right.
He's volunteering to do something.
It's so much fun doing the live tweeting. Actually, they're doing something kind of cool that, I don't know how they set it up, but it's like if you go to like the Halloween Facebook or Instagram, you can like send them a message and then they send you like it's like a hosted, like you start Halloween, the 2018 version, you know, that came out a couple years ago. You start that and you like start the feed or whatever. And it's like Jamie Lee Curtis, like factoids and things that pop up through the film and you like follow it on the, yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to do that sometime this week just to kind of see what it's like. And then, maybe like try to find some way to do that on like actual Halloween and kind of share that with folks. We'll see. But yeah, we're having a Halloween like Michael Myers marathon and Halloween 3, of course, the Season of the Witch for Halloween all day. It's going to be
like
so fun.
Starting with Halloween.
Yeah. What I did was I split the day into two parts. So it's going to be some of my favorite sequels in the morning the afternoon. It'll start at noon. And then there's going to be like a little interlude with Chelsea Stardust, you know, like videos and things that, you know, like the curation. And then
the official canon.
And then it'll be like the retcon thing. So it'll be Halloween 1978, Halloween 2018.
Are you watching
and
Rob
Halloween
Zombies?
Kills. No. Okay. No. I'm not doing those. Not for this. It's just too much. There's not enough time. And I want to be able to start like Halloween Kills by 8. That way people can, you know, it's a Sunday this year. So it's like, and everybody's old. Nobody wants to stay past, 10 o'clock anymore.
Girl, you don't also want us to stay past 10 o'clock.
On Halloween, I do. I want people there till midnight. Midnight to midnight, really. Everybody should come midnight on the 31st and stay until midnight on the 1st. We'll just have an all-day slumber party. Oh my gosh, this sounds so much fun. I'll build a fire in the back. You know, we can write our the things that we want to, you know, lose to in the upcoming year, burn them. It'll be fun. Like Are we you, did last year.
Is this basically like, do you want a sleepover or do you want us to like, you know, celebrate Samhain? Like,
I don't know. I have lots of ideas. We'll figure it out. Again, this is probably not the place to do that. I wish I could have all of our listeners here with me. One day we'll figure that out. We'll have a big, huge party and everybody will come. And we'll have it at your house. Anyways. All right. I think we've talked enough nonsense. So let's take a quick break and we will be back to chat about the Wicker Man.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
Welcome back. All right. So this week we are continuing our descent into folk horror madness with 1973's The Wicker Man. So last week when we did the Blood on Satan's Claw, I talked about how The Wicker Man was one of the three films that was sort of categorized as like the
Unholy Trinity.
The Unholy Trinity, exactly, of films that define the folk horror genre in the late 60s and early 70s. So this film we've got directed by Robin Hardy. It is written, the screenplay Anthony Schaefer, but it's based on David Pinner's 1967 novel Ritual, which I've not read, but now I really want to, starring Edward Woodward, Britt Eklund, Ingrid Pitt, and Christopher Lee. I think this is the first time we've done a film with Christopher Lee in it.
I don't know how that's correct, but I believe it is.
Yeah, because, yeah, I feel wow. like we're doing all kinds of firsts this over the last few weeks, because we'd never done a film with Vincent Price in it either until
no, I mean,
The House on Haunted Hill.
Again, this just shows how like vast the genre is.
Yeah. Truly.
And we can spend all this time, and you know, we've been doing this for, I don't know, it gets like 5-6 years now.
Something like that. We keep saying that, and we still have not like pinned down. It's just forever. I don't remember a time without you, Joe.
Yeah.
But yeah, so The Wicker Man, I wanted to sort of as an introduction read this little piece because I really liked it. This is from Senses of Cinema, The Wicker Man, written by Daniel Lammon. This is from March of 2019. It's in no way an exaggeration to say that there is no other film like Robin Hardy's 1973 masterpiece, The Wicker Man. Buried by its studio on initial release, but now revered as one of the finest British horror films ever made, it pushes the boundaries of the genre in the most exquisite ways while breaking all its rules at the same time. It is the strangest combination of elements. A horror film conducted almost entirely in daylight, with no blood or gore or acts of extreme violence, no monsters or supernaturalism, and driven so much by its score that it feels at times like a kind of musical. The Wicker Man is both contemporary and ancient, immediate and primal, baffling and deeply disturbing, and the shockwaves it caused are still felt in horror cinema today. Joe, what'd you think of The Wicker Man?
Well, this might shock you, Joshua, but I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm not shocked. I think it's a very good film, even outside the realm of horror, so.
I loved it. I was engaged the whole time. Mm-hmm. What did you say to me before we started? It's like, you might love this because it's accidentally a musical.
Yes.
Yeah. So, which I did. And again, like, we really need to do The Love Witch, one of these episodes, because, like, watching this actually made me really appreciate more The Love Witch, because
yeah.
it has a lot of that kind of like random singing and all of a sudden and people like celebrating around a maypole and stuff like that. And so
yeah.
Soundtrack was great. I'm kind of bummed that I posted my my horror movie challenge soundtrack thing already, because I would have put this one instead. But yeah, overall, really good. I don't usually say this about movies before 1980, but I would watch this again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm glad because I also enjoy it. I think it's, you know, it's very ominous. It's one of those films that it's very tight. The story, I feel like, you know, you're following this guy all around this island. You know, things are getting like as it moves on, it gets more and more ominous, more and more like, what is happening here exactly? Like things start going on. Images start popping in. It just gets like freakier and freakier as it goes. So I enjoy it. I really feel like even outside of horror, which in a way, I mean, it's a horror film again, because of like the existential elements of it, you know, the conversation happening in it is, you know, thousands of years old, you know, as long as we've been like conquering and, you know, colonizing each other, you know, these sorts of, stories exist. So it's extremely relevant still, almost 50 years after it came out. It's beautiful. I agree. I like the music in it. Like, even though, yeah, there's times where it's like, gosh, it really does feel like a musical. But I feel like it makes sense. Like, these are people having a good time. They're playing the music. Like, what is it? Diegetically. Like, it makes sense in the context of the film. Mm-hmm. It's not like they just burst out singing. I mean, they do, but it's within the confines of like the festival coming up and
the
culture.
They know that they're singing and the guy knows that they're singing.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I'm in a musical and you don't know if I'm really singing.
Exactly. So I think it still works all these years later. And this was one of those movies that I knew we were definitely obviously going to watch for the folk horror. You can't, The Wicker Man, you cannot avoid. I feel if you're going to, if we're.
Wow, how ominous.
Right, exactly. If you cannot, or I mean, if you're going to do a film like exploration of folk horror, like, yeah, The Wicker Man is going to be in there. So let's get down to it. I think this is one of those movies that I feel like your social position will really inform like the interpretation of it to a certain degree. Like, who is the villain in the movie? Who is, like, you know, who's right, who's wrong? I think can really depend based on like how you kind of view the movie. And I'm only saying this because I read a few different reviews of it where, you know, some people like really identify with the main character, with Sergeant Neil Howie. You know, so he's going, you know, he arrives in these like the Hebridean island, Summer Isle, to follow up on reports that a girl has gone missing there, a child. So he's coming there to help find that, you know? So it's like, ostensibly...
Well, he does think he's helping.
Right. So ostensibly, like, he's the, like, good guy in the film, right? Because he's coming there, he wants to find the girl, and, you know, and so his exploits, that he's who we are following, is he's uncovering more information about the town. But, you know, the more he goes about his work, the more you're like, this guy is a fucking prick. He's a jerk. He's such a jerk. He's so mean and nasty and like completely like uninterested in working like with these people.
He's a guest of this, like, he's a guest of these people.
Yeah.
And
they're all welcoming and like deliriously happy to have him there,
so
obviously.
Happy. Love him there. I mean, well, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. But like, it just doesn't make, like, for me, I just, like, the rules of hospitality, like, are, the rules of hospitality are very sacred to me. And so, like, in this situation, it's like, wow, you're a really shitty guest.
Yeah.
Coming in and, like, shitting all over, like, these people's belief and stuff. And that's the other thing, too, is that up until the very end, they're not hiding anything from him. But he is, like, he's abusing his authority, almost. I think there were several times, if you remember, where I was like, he can't do that. He can't do that.
Yeah, you were very concerned with his overreach of police.
I know. I was like, where is the due process of law here?
Yeah, you're like, where's the warrant, sir?
Yeah.
So some of the reviews, like, where it's, I feel like if you're somebody who's like deeply Christian and you go into watching this film, like, you probably really do identify and see him as like, he's right. Like, these people are crazy. Like, what is happening? And one of the reviews I read was like, the thing with this movie is it's about like denialism on the side of like the island inhabitants, you know, that because they're in such extreme denial, like they're, you know, destroying the world around them because they can't see like Christ's love and they can't admit that like they're crops have, you know, died and they just need to like move on from that. And like, that's what the film is about, that, you know, and so there is this kind of like, if you're watching it as one of those people, you probably do see, it's a very specific, like Christian anxiety, like cultural anxiety, that like the Christian faith is under attack, that like, especially at this time, again, we're looking at the 70s. So this is before the Texas Chainsaw Massacre would come out. Again, this is a British produced film, but still, like, just to discuss like the, you know, destruction of values, the destruction of like the nuclear family. Like, again, we're having those conversations of like the apocalyptic visions of the future that, you know, Protestant, Catholic, like, devout Christian people have been concerned about for, you know, the last 2000 some years, you know, that Jesus is going to have to come back, the apocalypse, the Antichrist, like all of those sorts of anxieties are inhabited in like him. Also like white male anxieties of like, I mean, even though everybody in the film is white, I think there is still something to be said for like pagan beliefs or like natural world beliefs meeting up against like a strong, like Christian, devout Christian white male with authority presence. Like, it gives, there is a sort of indigenous tension in this film, even if
everyone
they're
is
not
a colonizer.
Present, yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everyone's a colonizer.
Yeah, but like, I think there can be a reading of that, like the threat of that.
Well, we talked about this in, when you were outlining what exactly folk horror was, is that like, it's white people afraid of white people. Like,
right, yeah. Yeah, to some degree.
It's white people afraid of white people, because like Lord Summer Isle even says that, like, you know, his grandfather came and basically, you know, colonized the island, but like, you know, made it what it was. It's just so fascinating because it's like he is like, not for nothing, the Catholics also did that. I thought it was very strange because like when I think of, Great Britain, I don't normally go to Catholicism right away, you know, because Great Britain is famously an Anglican country. Like, that's where the Church of England, you get. So it was interesting to kind of see him. It was interesting to see that representation of like when he's having his like dark set night of the soul while the woman next door is like, you know, popping her pussy to wet ass pussy. Like, you see him like taking communion, but like taking communion in the like Catholic true presence kind of way. And this film would come out 1973, right? Mm-hmm. So this film's like 10 years removed from the Second Vatican Ecumenical the Second Ecumenical Council of the Vatican, aka Vatican II, where kind of like the Latin Mass goes out, like, you know, there's changes that are happening. And so it kind of, I was trying to make a point that like this was so close to that, maybe a commentary on that, because like, but it's 10 years removed, so maybe not necessarily, but there's that kind of renewed conversation about what that means to be Catholic, especially in that time.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, and one that like I definitely was not aware of, not being a Catholic and not knowing too much about Catholic history.
Oh, we're in my Catholic wheelhouse with this film. Okay.
Well, you know what else came out in 1973?
What?
The Exorcist.
Oh.
So yeah, there was a lot of Catholic.
We may have talked about.
We might have.
Yeah, the Vatican II. But that was, you know, that was like 5 or 6 years ago.
I know, right? Yeah, 10, 20 years ago. Sometime in the beginnings of this. Yeah, so there's definitely like this. Again, I mean, obviously this is like a Celtic faith, so it's like not. I'm not trying to be dismissive of like indigenous beliefs, but I'm just saying that this film feels very much like a tension with those sorts with the meeting of these old ways and like the new God of, you know, Christianity and the gods of pagan cultures of nature, of natural
the
religions.
The old gods and the new.
Yes. American gods.
Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, it just, like, there's that real, like, embodiment of, like, again, this island, these people represent, like, they're doing all the things that, like, strongly devout Christians want to deny themselves, you know, the hedonism of like sex and freedom, and that they're talking about things and they're dancing and they're wild and, you know, they're all like ecstatic. They're in some sort of, you know, fervor. And he's just like everywhere he goes, like he's wearing his uniform. He's very buttoned up. He's very like, I represent, you know, and he's just kind of coming up against everything that he thinks is like wrong in the world. Another thing I like about this film is because when we did The Blood on Satan's Claw, obviously that is a very, that has a clear supernatural element. And so that's like one kind of side of like examining folk horror from a place where the horror is very real in the sense of a supernatural entity coming from the ground, coming from, you know, the other realm, the other space, you know, the liminal space between worlds. Whereas this one is very much rooted. There's not any supernaturalism in it. I like that in the introduction I was reading. This is really truly about like the horror of people, you know, of like, you know, our belief systems, our practices coming up against each other and creating the tension and creating the horror and creating the violence, the aggression, even though obviously in the case of the people, they're all like, you know, it's not bad to them what they're doing. It's not evil. They're, you know, making a sacrifice to their God, very children of the corn, yeah, as we discussed. So going back to what I was trying to say about those kind of the two readings. So there's that reading where like that guy's the hero, or like, you know, me being an atheist or somebody who's more part of like the natural world, it's like, no, the hero is these people. It's the other side. Like they need to destroy this like imperialist invading entity and sacrifice him to return the world to the place it was before that kind of oppression existed. Mm-hmm. So I just think, again, it depends on like your positioning of how you want to read it. What do you think, like,
about who the villain is?
Yeah, or is it just everybody, maybe? Which is kind of where I fall. It's like, obviously, like, I don't want to burn people alive. I think that's awful. So it kind of, but you know, it puts you in this weird position in the movie when watching it. It's like, well, who is, if you're going to read it in this bigger way. I mean, obviously, if you're just going to watch it as a horror film, yeah, then.
Well, I think the binary, right, of like good guys and bad guys doesn't exist in this film.
That's fair.
I think what we're dealing with, as you mentioned, is like we're dealing with people, and specifically we're dealing like the horror of belief and the power of belief.
Yeah.
And it is their beliefs that are driving things. So like if people have, and we're taught, like, specifically as Americans, that, you know, what people believe is a sacred thing.
Right.
Like, we're...
to some degree.
To some degree, yes. What we believe, you know, to respect others' beliefs to a certain degree, you know, and within reason.
I don't even mean that. What I meant was that there are some, like, people say that, but generally when people say that, what they mean is everybody be Christian.
Yeah,
and respect Christian beliefs.
Exactly. And I'm thinking from like, I'm thinking also along those lines as well.
I feel like it's limited, even though we have that belief, this ideal, but you know.
And it's just starting to like incorporate like the other, like Judeo-Christian and, like, you know, monotheistic religions, right? So
yeah.
So with this film, you're coming up against the idea of belief, which means that which is such an overwhelming power that it like will, it literally consumes this man, but it's also consumed them. And so, you know, it's what their belief dictates. And if you want to take it all the way back, let's take it all the way. If you want to talk about like Catholic history, right? Let's take it back to, you know, Emperor Constantine and In Hoc Signo, in this sign you will conquer, right? Like the conquering, like a colonial and imperialistic force of most of human history was like people who did things in the name of Jesus Christ. So it's interesting to see, like, you know, this guy is the okay, but like at the same time, like he is an authoritarian figure that has like, you know, wearing the mantle of Christ
right,
to tell these people that their lives are wrong. So he's the villain. But like, I mean, at the same time, it's like he's also, the way he dies is just very, like, it's that lovely, delicious, like, horror movie morality where it's like, right. Well, you were shitty, so now you're going to get burned alive. I don't know. I guess my answer to you is that, like, I don't know who is the bad guy.
Yeah.
Because I actually didn't even think that there would be, like, a quote-unquote villain in this. As I'm watching it, that never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Because I see them as being completely in the right. Also because, you know, they're the hosts. It's on their land. He is the one who's the outsider. He was the thing that... I guess you could say about the quote unquote villain aspect of it is the idea that, like, they manipulated him and made it in such a way that he was lured in.
Yeah, of course. Well, that was going to be one of my next point to that is exactly, like, he comes there with a mission that is honorable, to want to find, you know, a missing child, somebody who may be murdered. And of course you're, like, suspicious of this town that's like, we don't know who that is. We've never heard of this girl. And of course, as he uncovers things, it's like, wow, these people are, like, hiding something. But again, like, it's that positioning. It's that I like this because it brings up all those kinds of questions, and you're watching it and you're just like, when you're applying this, like, cultural lens or looking that we're still having these conversations of, like, whose God is God, whose God is right, whose is wrong, you know, whose actually exists, whose doesn't exist. I really like that tension in this film. And I really like, one of my favorite things about this is as he's going along and he's dismissive of their faith, of their beliefs that echo, like, Catholicism. Like, he's a Catholic and he's, like, talking about, you know, like, the body of Christ. Like, you take communion. This is my body. This is my blood. Like, that's, like, it's a cannibalistic kind of act.
Which I thought was great because, like, he was reading that portion in scripture where he's reading that portion in the scripture that's basically, like, the scriptural support for the Eucharist.
Yeah.
And Catholics are the only Christian religion that believe in true presence, which means that they are literally eating the body of body and blood.
Yeah, it's
transubstantiation.
Transubstantiation, yeah.
Where, you know, the body becomes the bread and wine become body and blood, and that's what happens. And so, like, I think that point that you're making is beautifully illustrated when he has his interaction with Lord Summer Isle, and he's like, you know, oh, they're celebrating, like, it's a ritual for parthenogenesis.
Yeah.
And you're like, parthenogenesis, what's that? And it's like, oh, you're going to conceive without a man. And it's like, well, what about Jesus? I'm like, well, I'm sure Jesus was born of a virgin who had sex with a ghost.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's so dismissive of their beliefs, without, like, seeing the irony. And the guy's just like, wasn't Jesus born of a virgin?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, like, yeah, I mean, parthenogenesis comes from the Greek, like, partha, like, Athena Parthenos, mm-hmm. right? So, like, where she was born without a man. Like,
right.
She was born from, well, maybe not, because she was born from Zeus's head, so yes, technically she was a man. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that. I can cut that out later. We can. What I'm saying is that, like, you're exactly right in saying that. Like, there's a lot of Christian belief, a lot of Catholic belief that is, like, directly rooted in pagan tradition. I mean, anyone who's really looked into Christmas, Easter,
right,
like, the big pagan festivals that were basically revamped and rewritten for to incorporate Christ and Christianity, mm-hmm. and then, like, in modern secular times have also kind of reverted
right
back to it, right? Because, like,
yeah, to some extent, yeah, there is that kind of, especially with, like, Easter, with, like, the rabbits and the eggs, like, we now, like, I think a lot more people have an appreciation for the pagan roots of those, mm-hmm. that maybe they didn't have years ago when it was more about resurrection and not rebirth of, yeah. like, you know, the spring and the sun, the harvest and all, you know, like, yeah. the planting and that sort of thing.
And then with, like, Christmas being, like, basically the Saturnalia festival that
right.
was, like, outlawed in Rome for a long time and then came back, rebranded it as Christmas. Now we're in a situation where it's like, no, unless it is a Christian movie, there is no popular, there's nothing anywhere in any, like, most popular Christmas movies that ever mention the birth of Christ. It's just
right, it's
this is our winter holiday.
Yeah, we've seen like sort of a reversion. I also think it's interesting that he's like talking about, like, again, the ridiculousness of their practices. Like, you know, you can't just like sacrifice somebody to like save everybody else. And again, it's like, well, isn't that like the whole point of your faith in Jesus, is that he was sacrificed to save the whole? Yeah. And so they're like, you should love this because you're now like Jesus. Like, yeah, we're sacrificing you so that we may.
Exactly. We're giving you actually the opportunity to realize the most sacred part of your religion, which is to be a martyr.
To be a martyr. Yeah. So there's just a lot of those like delicious moments in this that, again, if you're somebody who's extremely religious or extremely Christian, like, I mean, I don't know if you'd be watching The Wicker Man anyways, but possibly. I wonder if it'd be interesting to talk to somebody who's watched it from that perspective, because I would be curious to know, like, do those like messages creep in? Like, do you understand how much of your faith and how dismissive you are of other thing, of other, like, you know, these sorts of like natural religions, like your faith is rooted in those and reflects some of those same like mythologies of like, you know, the green man, of rebirth, of, you know, resurrection kinds of things.
Yeah.
Because I have no idea, like watching it, you know, as an atheist, I'm just like, this is fascinating from like just looking at it as a cultural anxiety of like the destruction of values that, you know, people say that the country is going in, you know, that, you know, this free, like, freedom that women have in a way. Although I don't think this film does as, I don't know if I'd call this necessarily like a feminist film.
I don't know about that either.
Yeah, they try the remake. That's what they tried to kind of do. The Nick Cage film that came out in 2006. They made changes to it to kind of give it that sort of thing. Like, you know, I think the Christopher Lee's character is played by Ellen Burstyn. Mm-hmm. So she's like Lady Summer Isle, I think, or Mother Summer Isle, or Sister Summer, something like that. You know, one of those kinds of, you know, to know that she's like
Lady Mother Sister,
the pagan, yes. Like she's running this thing, and it kind of has that sort of, you know, more of a conversation about like patriarchal destruction and whatnot. This is more feels a little. I mean, Lord Summer Isle's very cult figure, like,
yeah. Well, this is very much like, it is very much an indictment, or no, maybe not an indictment, but like an exploration and examination of like the old ways and the new ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And old culture versus like modern culture, because again, like, you know, there's a lot technologically that's happening. There's a lot that's happening. Like, we just finished the 60s. You know, there's a lot going on. And this guy is like, that's the other thing too, is that like, for as Sergeant Howie is like also very, very antiquated, but like a specific type of,
yeah,
he's a specific type of anachronism, right?
Yeah.
Cause his belief is so formal, and it's bound in like restraint, and it's
right.
bound in sacrifice, like in self-denial.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, like with this, it's like, it's uncomfortable for me to watch as someone who, you know, was raised Catholic and had a very robust Catholic faith for a long time. It's repressed much. I know it was very uncomfortable to watch, because he's just like going in there telling these people that they're doing it wrong, which is kind of the reason why like I don't really practice anymore, is because people are telling me I'm doing it wrong.
Right.
But he also is like, they have so much joy.
Yeah.
And you can't.
Yeah, they're ecstatic the whole time.
They're ecstatic the whole time. And it's just like, who's the one who's in the prison? Like,
right.
Who's the one that's in the prison? Because he has so much, they have so much joy. And he's the one who's like, you know, yes, he's there to investigate potentially a disappearance, or disappearance, potentially a murder. But, you know, who's the one that's in prison? Who's the one that's, you know,
yeah, everywhere he looks, he sees, you know, perversion, or like, you know, he's like very upset that the children are being given like a frank lesson on like
the phallus and the penis, yeah,
and, you know, and that the people in the town are just are free and, you know, doing things that they want.
My misogyny alert was going off during that scene because he like called all of them liars.
Yeah, it was very. Yeah, he was.
You're like, the biggest liar of them all. Or well, we thought we were gonna do this whole episode in the brogue, in the Scottish brogue.
No, I'm glad. That was a choice that we wisely.
I know we don't want to alienate away those from. Folks.
it's quite a film. Like, you know, I'm so glad that it's still around, that because it was sort of shelved. What I was reading was, you know, the studio was just like, whoa, what do we make? Is this going to go over well, you know? And so it kind of could have been lost very easily to time. And thankfully it wasn't, because it is a very, it works on so many levels. It's got a lot of subtext, I think, in it. It has, and even if not, if you just watch it from beginning to end as the story that it is, it's great. The music, it's weird and
catchy.
Yeah, there are definitely some catchy moments in it.
It's like that, oh God, it's that, like, when you, like, you listen to it, and it's like that, you know, folky, poppy,
yeah,
you know, music from specifically the UK at the time.
Yeah, just that pastoral folk kind of tunes.
And then, when he's getting when he's chasing Rowan through the cave, it's like, it's very like Mod Squad. It's very like, pow, pow, pow. Like,
that's true. Yeah, the music really takes a turn there. Yeah. Right before the whole film takes a big turn.
Yeah.
The ending, obviously, you know, it goes right through to old Howie. He's getting burned up in the Wicker Man. I read differing reports that some of the animals were injured, but then somebody else said that they weren't, so I couldn't find, because I was a little concerned. There were some moments there where they were showing the fire, and it was like, some of those animals are in, like, where is that fire actually at?
Yeah.
Because the animals
are. It also looked like he was literally
in the
getting
yeah, there. It was kind of like scary. Like, I'm very curious how they like filmed all that. And then, like, it's a little distressing to watch, you know, if you've not seen it, dear listener, and you're listening to this first. But I like, some of the screaming of the animals is very disorienting and very like upsetting. I think there was like a moment where the goat is like going on, and I'm just like, this is making me really, like, you know, like they're burning a guy alive, but I'm very concerned for the goat.
I was just about to call attention to the fact that Joshua is,
he's got Jesus, though. He's screaming about Psalms, and, you know, what is that Psalm?
The Lord is my shepherd.
Yeah, you know? 23 or something.
Yeah.
You know, 27, 21, 22, I don't know. It's one of those. It's a famous Psalm.
Yes. 21, 24, 27.
So he's like, you know, he's at peace. He knows he's going to burn up and he's going to go see Jesus. But the poor goat, they don't freaking know. And the pigs and the other things. So I hope that none of the animals actually were like burned. But there were.
I also hope that he wasn't either.
No, I'm sure he wasn't. Yeah, I think he was fine. I think he actually. I think Christopher Lee said this is one of his favorite movies to make. I think that guy also said that he really enjoyed the film, the final product, Edward Woodward. I think so, that was some of the notes that I saw, was that, yeah, I think a lot of the people involved in this, like, were really proud of it in the end, and still, like, well, those who were alive until recently, you know, I still consider it to be a good film. And we're happy to be part of it.
Mm-hmm. Dear listener, if you have any film editing prowess, please make me a video of the landlord's daughter doing her pussy dance with wet ass pussy in the background. Please do that for me.
That was quite an intense scene. That's very 70s as well, like all of like the female nudity. Because I'm trying to think, there isn't really any male nudity at all in it, is there?
No.
Yeah.
But that's also misogyny.
Right. Yeah. That's the way that shows up. It's not like.
Yeah.
There's not like context given, you know, the women are just trying to get like impregnated by the fire god or whatever.
Yeah.
That was one last point that we kind of talked about was that, so they lure the guy there so that he's like there, he's got to fulfill their four things, you know, that he's got the power of the king, that he comes willingly, that he's a fool, and then that he's also a virgin. I was trying to think, like, how many films are there? I mean, obviously, Hocus Pocus, we talked about earlier.
Yes,
that
Hocus Pocus.
Needs a virgin to light the candle, and who happens to be a boy.
Yeah.
But it didn't have to be a man, right? Well, I guess this didn't really have to be a man either. They could have sacrificed someone else, but I thought that was interesting that a plot point being that a man was a virgin, I think is kind of rare in films, especially then in 73.
Yeah. And also because there was, it's interesting because like in the context of the film, like there's that reverence for the phallus, right? With the maypole and everything. So to have a man be a virgin who, there's a purity there. And he is willing to, like, you know, it's his blood in which they're, that here's his pure, unsullied blood.
Right.
Where he can cast his seed onto their orchards and thus, you know, be whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, help them, you know, get their crops back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting plot point that when I was watching it again, I was thinking, like, you know, have we seen that in many films? Like, it's pretty rare. If it's not for a comic, obviously, you know, comedy reason, for it to be, like, a really literal, like, you know, this man is a virgin.
Once bitten.
Right, but again, that's funny.
Comedy, yeah, that's comedy.
But, I mean, you're right. It's part of it, but I'm just trying to think of, like, horror films that kind of explore that. So, I think that kind of adds another interesting layer to it.
Dear listener, message us, please, if you find any other non-comedic horror films where being a male virgin is something that is required.
Yeah. Do you think their crops come back?
That's a good question. I actually did, because the thing that I loved about his final like plea is that it instills enough doubt in the viewer. But it also shows the kind of the horror of belief because it's like, no, this is going to happen. Like, I was expecting Christopher
Lee. But they are also very steadfast in their beliefs and will not be talked out of them as well.
Exactly.
Same as him, yeah.
Exactly. And I think that it was interesting when he was like, they'll ask for you next time somehow.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, first of all, how do you know that? Second of all, I was expecting him to be like, sure, and I will give my life for this place.
Yeah.
But he didn't say that. He surprised me when he was like, no, it's going to happen.
Yeah. This like, will work. We're not worried about it.
This is going to work. We're not worried about it. Go for it.
Yeah. I, again, because they never really hint at a truly supernatural presence, we're left at the end with that kind of question of whether or not it actually works. Obviously, you know, we're going to talk about some other folk horror films, but, because you've seen a few, obviously you can see how this echoes into them. So it's going to be fun to continue this conversation, comparing things back to The Wicker Man, which I think some of the upcoming movies have more in common with than The Blood on Satan's Claw, because there's, you know, again, lacking like a supernatural element to some degree. The next film we're doing, I think, does have it kind of combines them, you know, so it's like part Wicker Man, part Blood on Satan's Claw. But you obviously can see how they're echoing.
Yes, the Wicker Claw.
Right, the Wicker Claw.
The blood on Satan's man.
The blood on his wicker chair. That's something else. never mind. All right, well, yay. That was The Wicker Man, Joe. Another film you've seen.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
We're,
what is this, 170 something, 180 episodes?
Oh my gosh,
you've watched so much horror.
We've watched so much, and still we have more to watch.
Yes, there's always more. That's what's amazing. The list grows every day.
That is the true message of this show, is that there's always horror.
Yes.
Look behind you.
Alrighty. Well, thank you again. This was so much fun, as always. This was a joy. Joyful, joyful.
Lord,
we
adore thee.
We do. We do adore thee. I do want us to take a little trip in the backyard. I have something I would like you to see.
there was a man and he was on a grave and then there was a woman on top of that man and then what is it?
I don't know, but you're going to figure it out.
What's the sign of the man and the woman and the grave?
I remember that the tree with the limb, with the branch, with the nest, with the egg, with the feather, in the bed.
In the bed. And then, okay, the tree, and then in the bed, there is a man and then the woman's on top of the man and then inside the man is a seed. The seed goes into the woman and then there's a boy. Like, you have to watch The Wicker Man to even remotely get what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. We'll learn the song, Joe, and we'll perform it at karaoke next time we're out. Alrighty, that is enough of this nonsense. Good night.